Stories, awakening, possibility, social impact. Creating a culture of compassion, connection, and collaboration. You are listening to Hollyhock Talks, a podcast about the teachers and luminaries that make Hollyhock extraordinary. Hollyhock is Canada's leading leadership learning center, located on Cortez Island. Hollyhock Talks brings a little piece of Hollyhock magic to you, wherever you are listening. You're listening to Hollyhock Talks. I'm Farah Nasrallah, and I'm thrilled to be here with David Abram, who is leading a program at Hollyhock called Falling Awake, The Ecology of Wonder. David is a cultural ecologist and geophilosopher. He's author of The Spell of the Sensuous, Perception and Language in a More Than Human World, and also the book Becoming Animal, An Earthly Cosmology. Welcome.
Thanks, Farah. Very nice to be with you.
So tell me a little bit about the program that you're going to offer at Hollyhock, and specifically what it means to awaken animal intelligence.
Well, this, I think it's a fairly long workshop, 6 days to work together, play together, feel together, and fall awake into the more than human earth. So animal intelligence, or creaturely intelligence, the intelligence of our body, waking up as a fully sentient creature whose awareness is not located somewhere in your skull, but is distributed throughout your whole sensate organism. So beginning to blend our awareness or mind back into the whole of its body, so that we are experiencing the world around us not as subjects looking out at an objective world, but our feelingful, sensate bodies engaged in a world of many other bodies, some of which are human, some of which are winged, some of them rooted, trees and herbs and plants, and some of them finned folks who swim in the waters that surround the island of Cortez, where we're doing this course. And of course, some of those bodies are those of other land animals, creatures who, like us, walk the ground, but who experience the world, the very same world that we experience, but from an entirely different angle, through an entirely different set of senses. So it does seem to me that every species has its own felt experience of this earth. And we are just one, an amazing creature, but an animal nonetheless, and hence in many ways just one of the gang, us humans. All of these other creatures are necessary parts of our world and of our experience, but we've become kind of blind and deaf to the existence of all of these other shapes of sensitivity and sentience with whom we share our world. So a big part of what my work is about is waking up to, beginning to notice all of these other forms of experience whose lives intersect ours, often at oblique angles, But we take them so much for granted. What is it to begin to notice that all of these other creatures, even the plants around us, the trees, the forest itself, that these are sensing, sentient beings with their own subjectivity, their own felt experience of this world, although they're experiencing it very differently from the way we are.
So it sounds like what people will have an opportunity to do is really access a deeper intelligence of the body and make the connection to other species and other beings. And the way that we share the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so, because, you know, to the extent that we take our own body for granted, or that we think of our body as just sort of the house of our spirit or our consciousness, we stay very detached, almost alienated from the whole of the body's world, most of which is not human. It is our bodies that give us access to the world of other animate bodies, other animals, plants, but even the winds and the clouds and the rivers and the ocean waves, because all of these beings are bodily presences, those waves or the thunderclouds. And so it's only by identifying much more fully and deeply with our own carnal presence, with our own bodily, thingly presence in this world, that we begin to become aware of these other presences, these other shapes of intelligence, who are just as present and just as awake and just as engaged in the world as we are, but from their own angle and perspective.
So the title of your program is called Falling Awake. And when I think of awake, I think of words like enlightenment or higher states of consciousness. But it sounds like you're talking about something very distinctly different.
Yes, we're not really working on higher states of consciousness, but on deeper states of consciousness. If this is in some ways about a kind of enlightenment, it's also about endarkenment, about becoming more conversant, more at home in the bodily, material world from which our spiritual traditions, as well as our very abstract civilization, has sort of estranged us. So there's something about the dark, there's something about the shadowed richness of this earthly world that has been kind of scary to much of settled civilization. The wild and the wildness of the earth itself has many qualities that seem terrifying to the over-domesticated human creature who seems kind of perturbed that it's alive and embedded within a world that is so much bigger than it, wherein there are things out and about that can eat us. And this terror of being out of control, of being subject to forces that we cannot control, like the climate itself, like the wildness of other animals, or even of illnesses that sometimes spread like infectious contagion across a continent. All of this seems to have made many of us modern folk kind of hide from our direct corporeal or carnal experience in the thick of this breathing biosphere. So what we're on about in this course is waking up as a fully embodied human animal.
And as such, I imagine that would completely change the way we relate to the natural world.
Yes, I think it does. And of course, this is not entirely contrary to the great spiritual traditions or the mystical traditions, though it has much more in common with the indigenous traditions of this earth. And we will listen in on some of the indigenous wisdom traditions, because that has been very, very central to my own unfurling and my own waking up, really, within my own skin, has been the luck that I have had to live and spend spend time with a handful of traditional indigenous peoples in Indonesia, in Nepal, among the Sherpa people, and in the Americas, with a range of native cultures native to this continent. But the other spiritual traditions, you know, always have at their core a mystical tradition. And at the heart of the mystical tradition, one often finds the magical tradition. The magicians, who are the mystics of this world, they practice a kind of mysticism of the material world itself. They don't seek to transcend the body's world, or the world of shape and color and texture, but to keep faith with the body's world and to stand here in the depths of this blooming, buzzing proliferation of life and shadow, to the point where every material being, every plant, every animal, every stone or rock begins to shine with a kind of luminous power and resonance. It rings in the air, and things almost radiate or speak or sing. That's maybe one way I would describe the magic tradition. And some of the greatest mystics and masters within the great spiritual traditions were really magicians of this sort. I'm thinking just now of the great Buddhist patriarch Dogen, who really brought Buddhism from China to Japan. And back in the 12th, 13th century, Dogen has a very famous line from his Genjo Koan. It's translated into English. It goes something like this. He says that the self advances and realizes the 10,000 things is delusion. That the 10,000 things advance and realize themselves is enlightenment. By which I think he means that when you are really awake, when you are really astutely, attentively awake in the, with the whole of your skin, then you cannot help but notice that everything else is also awake. Everything. The rocks, the clouds, the trees. Even the gusts of wind blowing past your face, all are awake and felt to be living, animate powers.
Well, that's a very appealing, a very appealing and attractive state to abide in. Can you tell us a little bit about the practices or activities that you'll guide people to so that this can arise? This experience can arise?
Well, listen, I mean, we are doing this workshop, after all, at Hollyhock on Cortez Island, one of the most resplendent natural landscapes in all of North America, set amid wild nature, this vast inland sea of the Salish Sea, or used to be called the Puget Sound, but this land of islands and snow-capped mountains, where the winds and the weather patterns, the clouds, are often morphing and transforming. We're working in a forest in which there are many old, old trees that were never cut by the civilized saws. Stands, even just behind Hollyhock there, there's stands of old cedars that I love to teach among, or work and play among, and I hope we'll do a fair amount of our work there in a grove of great trees. And we'll be working first and foremost with our animal senses. I mean, our eyes and our ears and our skin and our nostrils, even our taste buds. Waking up our senses from the kind of stunned stupor, the dulled and deadened state that our bodily senses seem to fall into under the influence of very outmoded ways of thinking and speaking that do tend to close down the senses to the earthly sensuous, so that we become kind of oblivious to the sensuous world around us, the earth. So we'll be working with the ecology of sensory experience, the way that our senses, in their activity, function almost as a kind of glue that binds our separate nervous systems into the encompassing ecosystem. That is the activity of our eyes, seeing the visible shapes of things, the colors of things, but our ears as well, tuned to the many voices that surround us, not just human voices, but those of birds, of humming insects, of howling creatures, that the activity of our ears and of our sniffing noses, bind our individual nervous systems into the local ecosystem and deeply sort of connect our awareness in with the wide awareness of the land itself. But we'll also be then beginning to work with the mysteries of language, the ecology of language, how what we say has such a profound influence upon what we see or hear or even taste of the earth around us. Because I'm convinced that there are many ways of speaking that we have inherited as Western, modern, technologized folks, ways of speaking that really function to close our senses, to deaden and deafen our ears to the many-voiced world. But I'm just as convinced that there are other ways of speaking, just slightly different ways of wielding our words that can open and encourage this spontaneous reciprocity between our animal body and the rest of the animate earth, between our senses and the earthly sensuous.
That's very interesting, your reference to language.
Go ahead.
I've heard that in other cultures, there's some languages where there's no I, or that there's no past or future, or that the way things are articulated are very different from how they're formed in English. And I imagine you're talking about more than that, though.
Well, that's already quite a lot to say that the particular language that one speaks really shapes and structures or informs your felt experience of the world, your perception of the world. And I think that is true, that when we inhabit different languages, when I'm speaking French, for instance, I slip into a very altered experience of the world than I do when I'm speaking English. But how much more different the experience is if I slide into an indigenous oral language that has never been written down. Because when we speak of indigenous cultures and indigenous peoples, we're speaking of cultures that were traditionally oral cultures, cultures that developed and flourished in the absence of any formal writing system. Oral cultures are cultures of story, whereas for us, when we want to know information about something, when we want to find particular information about how to build a certain structure or a particular kind of boat or how to live in a particular land or what plants are good for healing certain ailments, we look it up in a book. But in a culture without writing, a culture without books, all of that rich, ancestrally gathered information and knowledge is held in stories. And so the stories are like the living encyclopedias of an oral culture. We will be, in our course, also exploring something about this link between story and the animate landscape, the old intimacy between language and the land, which lives in stories, and the way that stories, old, deep Aboriginal stories, are bound to places in the land where those stories happened. So story is one aspect of the ecology of language. Poetry, or what maybe more generally I would just speak of as poetics, is another key element that we'll be exploring and experimenting with. Poetics, by which I mean just speaking with real care for the sound of what you're saying, with real care for the beauty of words, the luscious texture and rhythm and music of certain words, and how in a very abstract and intellectual culture we tend to not notice the rhythm of our speaking. We think that language is just a kind of tool for representing the world. But when we wake up within our full body, animal, human skin, we cannot help but begin to pay attention to the liquid lusciousness of the words that roll off our tongue, that certain words really taste good, and other words that are too abstract or that are so long uprooted, that have been uprooted from the ground, from the earth for so long, they no longer have any soil left clinging to their roots. These words are, they don't speak to the body. They speak only to a kind of disembodied intellect. And so terms like that will begin to fall out of our speaking when we're together, because we'll be practicing speaking as full-bodied, creaturely human animals to one another. And you know, poets are the real artisans of this practice of speaking with full, wakeful attention to the bodily resonance of our words and phrases. What some poets are aware of and some remain unconscious to is that the body resonance of words also binds the body into the speaking land, the local earth, which speaks in so many different tongues, most of which are not human, and most of which don't therefore speak in words at all. And yet, bird song, owl hoots, cricket rhythms, frog gurglings, all of these are ways of speaking and expressing, and they carry rich meaning that we can feel with our bodies, even though those meanings can't always be translated into words. But nonetheless, we can receive some of the meaning. Yeah.
Well, you've certainly expressed so much about the program, such that I wish I could be there.
I wish you could as well.
I
hope anybody who happens to listen in on this and finds themselves tickled by something of what's been shared here will follow the promptings of their skin or some little muscle in their left knee that says, I want to get there. Well, come on and join. Come on and join us. It will be a rich week of that, you can be sure.
Mm-hmm. It's been so delightful. I feel that even though you are very far away physically, that I've been able to enter into your cosmos and see the world a little bit differently and taste and smell and listen to it from a whole different perspective.
Cool.
So
great.
Thank you so much. And I hope that many people will have the opportunity to do the same.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Farah.
Stories, awakening, possibility, social impact. Creating a culture of compassion, connection, and collaboration. You are listening to Hollyhock Talks, a podcast about the teachers and luminaries that make Hollyhock extraordinary. Hollyhock is Canada's leading leadership learning center, located on Cortez Island. Hollyhock Talks brings a little piece of Hollyhock magic to you, wherever you are listening.